Kia ora koutou. I'm going to talk about a study that Julie Lawrence and I have been working on since about 2006, and I'll just briefly mention that there was another part to the study where we spoke with professionals who were working with children, but what we're going to talk about today is the study that we did with parents. Doesn't work. So first of all, since the title of the study is Family Discipline and Context, we need to define discipline. And this is the sort of definition that we've used. The guidance of children's moral, emotional and physical development, enabling them to take responsibility for themselves when they're older. It involves helping children become aware of the boundaries of acceptable and unacceptable behaviour and teaching them cultural norms and values for relating to the world around them. Often our parents saw discipline in other sorts of terms, but most of them did see it as a socialisation thing, as about learning how you have to behave in society. So a little bit of background, why did we do this study? Well, I guess it's in the context of a lot of discussion about the importance of discipline and the long-lasting effects of the kinds of discipline that's used during childhood on children's development. And there has been research, there have been other many broad surveys, but they've tended to focus rather on physical punishment. And we were more interested in the broad range of techniques that parents use. Obviously, physical punishment is a controversial topic right now, and that did come up, but it was only a small part. And I should say that this is going to be a very selective presentation. I think our report is about 90-something pages, and so we've just picked out a few bits for you. And also, our feeling was that, especially in the context of changes in the law, that there was a need for better parent education and support in New Zealand, and that in order to be able to provide good parent education and support, we needed to know how families were coping now. What were the things that stressed them and what challenged them? So we didn't really have that kind of in-depth interview studies. A lot of these broad surveys didn't focus on those things. So these were the questions we asked. What did New Zealand families with preschool children, and the study is about families with children 2 to 5, there were a few a little bit younger than 2, but mostly between 2 and 5, what do they believe about appropriate disciplinary practices? What are the range and the typical uses of discipline? And how are they influenced by contexts and events over time? And what sort of support, if any, do families receive in their parenting with young children? So, we used a multi-method approach. It is a smallish scale study, but there is some quantitative data in it, and we've got graphs, and I think there's only one bit of numerical data we're going to show you today, but we do have more of that. It's just that I think some of the more interesting things to present here are some of the qualitative stuff. So we did semi-structured parent interviews. We asked the parents to keep a diary for 2 weeks, and that's given us some really interesting data. They had to record what happened over 3 days, over 2 weeks, 2 weekdays and 1 weekend day. And we asked them to tick off a checklist and make some ratings, but also to describe little disciplinary incidents. I'm not going to talk about that here, but that is really interesting. And we use a standardized measure called the Parenting Daily Hassle Scale. We recruited 100 families. They're from all over New Zealand, slightly more in the South Island for obvious reasons, which is where we come from. We interviewed 117 caregivers, 98 females and 19 males. Two of the females were grandmothers, the other 96 were mothers. One of the males were the grandfather and the other 18 were fathers. The figures on the printout you've got were slightly wrong, so I fixed that. We audiotaped the interviews, and we haven't transcribed them all. We selectively transcribed them. We would have had so much data, we wouldn't have known what to do with it if we transcribed it all. We coded the transcribed data, and we had an independent coder independently code 10 of the interviews, and we reached 91.54% agreement. So it's a reasonably reliable data. We collected the data, and this is quite crucial, I guess, between December 2006 and July 2008. So the legislation changed in June 2007. So I think it was about a third of the interviews we did before the legislation changed and two-thirds after. But the parents, pretty well all of them were aware of that issue and the fact that there was this big argument and discussion going on. So first of all, this is the question about what kind of parents, what kind of discipline parents use. We found just over a third fitted into an authoritative parenting approach, which is characterized by warmth, responsiveness, involvement, reasoning combined with firm boundaries. And there's an example. I'm easygoing, but I want him to know where he stands as well and things that are right. I want to be someone he can trust. When he's older, he can come to me when he has problems, have the confidence to tell me rather than to hide it and not tell me. Got to stick to it, or he's going to think if I go on long enough, mummy will buy them for me. And then another group, which we called the mixed group, because I've got five grandchildren, and I think both of my children are mixed. That is, everyone wants to be firm and authoritative, but it's pretty hard being like that all the time. And so sometimes you let them do things. So I'm firm on some behavior. I'm really strict on the physical behavior. I'm easygoing on a lot of other things. I always make sure I have time on my side. And I've a big philosophy of it doesn't matter in the big picture of things. I'm not ever going to scrap over food. If you don't want to eat, I don't care. I'm firm on bedtime. I'm firm on specific things. So that's what I mean by mixed. And I think a lot of parents come into it, and we find a lot of people were characterized as that. I think it's a very positive finding that less than 5%, 3.4% use what's called an authoritarian approach, which involves telling children to do things, demanding complete obedience without reasoning. And here's an example, and it happens to be a male. When mum's away, I get on top of them hard and fast, not violently, I'm in charge. Mum's away. I'm the one you're taking notice of, and after 30 minutes, they will start taking heed of it. Kay, that's his partner, is too easy with Jay, especially. I would give Jay a bit more of a decent hiding. I would straighten them out a bit. We are advocates of a smack bum. You'll be glad to know that that's a very small percentage of the sample. And then permissive, and these are about 10%, and permissive style is characterized by warmth but low monitoring and expectations. I think I'm quite relaxed, promote her self-esteem, help her make choices. No problem with what she wears during the day as long as she's clean and warm. We don't have a set bedtime. I don't have many rules. I'm fully into negotiating. So, you know, 1 in 10 parents is so really laid back. But mostly they try and have... How am I going for time? All right. Then one of the questions we asked was, what were the influences on your own parenting? And a lot of these things are quite unsurprising, but more than three quarters of the parents said that they had been influenced by their own upbringing. Seeing and hearing of what happens around your own personal experience when you're growing up, how your parents disciplined you and whether you think that's right or wrong and decide to go with it or get rid of it if it need be. Interestingly, a large group, 58%, say they were influenced by written information. So that shows, I think, the potentiality of good material to give to parents. And they talk about the family start materials and so on. And they say it has a big influence. So that's very positive. 41% said they were influenced by current family members. You know, watching my sisters raise the children or auntie who's worked with autistic children and so on. Now, I've got other influences. Now, I think a lot of that is things like Super Nanny, what's the other one, Little Angels and so on. A lot of the parents talk to us about those programs. And my feeling generally is that they're a reasonably positive influence, but that's just a gut feeling. Friends, important, but professionals, own education, surprisingly even a bit less than some of those other things. Religion, quite small in New Zealand, And the internet, I was surprised, because we find everything on the off the internet these days, don't we? Maybe not parents at home with small children. Now, and cultural background, of course, cultural background might be something that happens, but you're not aware of it. But they haven't, not very many of them have specifically mentioned that. Now, I think these ones are very interesting, because although we showed that about 80% of them were influenced by their own upbringing, there are some who've been brought up this way who are determined to change. And there have been some other interesting studies about this, like Marie Russell did a master's thesis quite a while ago on that. This guy, or this person, says, we were brought up with the whack, you know, we sort of lived off the wooden spoon and the jandle. I think I'm just trying to just sort of flush that away a bit. Like, considering how big I am, one swipe and I could probably kill him. And here's another one. We're bringing up our children quite differently from our parents. A general move away from smacking children. More time out. Sometimes I think my parents are secretly thinking that the child needs a good hiding. And we have had discussions around that. And this is the one that's out of order. This is, I thought, a lovely example of how friends, and in this case in an early childhood setting, the play center, was supportive. A friend... I'm able to impart some tips to others. Now, I remember someone saying to me when a child was having a tantrum, someone said, this is when you walk away, because I was trying to engage him because I was embarrassed. That was just a supporting, gentle way of giving me a bit of a hint. It worked. Now, Julie's going to take over and carry on from there. I just pressed the space bar because when I pressed this, it didn't do anything.
Okay, so one of the things we were interested in was what discipline techniques parents used, what they found to be effective, and also what didn't work for them. So the first column is the list of techniques they talked about that they use. We didn't give them a list. They actually answered freely, and then we coded them. So as you can see from the second column, these are the interview responses, and the most commonly used methods were timeout, distraction, and reward systems. More than half of parents using reasoning and withdrawal of privileges and praise. Just under half smacked or shouted, and only about a third ignored or used hugs and smiles. And then the least commonly used technique was making children apologise, but often that was talked about in conjunction with time out. So that is just apologise on its own. Okay, the responses to the other questions, which would be the effective and ineffective columns. What have you found to be the most effective form of discipline with your child? And also we asked for examples of approaches that they'd used in the past that hadn't worked. Okay, so time out and distraction and the withdrawal of privileges and also the reward systems were considered to be the most effective techniques. Okay, so timeout was the most popular punishment, and it was used by 82% of parents, and it was thought to be effective by the largest percentage of parents, with 43%. A fifth thought it didn't work, and here there's a couple of examples up there. And parents reported using timeout in a variety of ways. They were quite creative with their use of timeout. And it often was to suit the occasion or wherever they happened to be at the time. So timeout definitely gives a strong message that we didn't like what he did. Haven't had to use it lately, so possibly that means it did work and the messages have got across. Also, the second example there, we did get examples of timeout being used by children as young as one, which is... This particular example stays on for 1 minute, and that was a one-year-old child. There are other people who do also use it with one-year-olds. Nearly two-thirds of parents in the study use withdrawal of privileges to discipline the children. The most common privileges taken away was toys and TV programs. 30% considered this to be effective, with 10% saying that it didn't work. The main examples given by the interviewees for it not working was because they tried to, they didn't actually carry through the withdrawal of privileges. They would threaten and they wouldn't actually carry it through. Okay. So star or sticker charts were the most commonly form of rewards, they used rewards in quite diverse formats. There were examples of star charts being used for bedtime, and the reward was to go and pick a pair of pyjamas and things along those lines, but also small rewards too. 76% of families use reward systems, and they were mentioned as effective by 1 in 4 of the parents. 69% used praise, and again, 11% found this effective, and 3% didn't find it worked. So lots of praise. We've used praise to sort of try and shape his behaviour. And 41% of parents said they smacked, but we did find in the diaries that it was actually used very infrequently, and less than 1 in 10 found that smacking was effective. So with Kay, a smack is most effective. If she's sitting on her brother, she would be told to get off. She'll be given the count of 3 to get off. She'll then be removed from him. She goes back and does it again, and she will have her backside smacked.
We did have some examples of it being ineffective, but obviously the news.
Yeah. Well, I have got the example, yeah, and I'm just going to talk. I didn't realise it wasn't in there. So, right. So we obviously, over a third of parents, which was the largest number for any of the techniques, considered that smacking didn't work. And there are a range of reasons that parents came to this conclusion, excuse me. And the example that we've got, which we haven't got on the slide, I'll just read you these quotes. We tried slapping him on the hand when he ran across the road without looking. No, he just started slapping us on the hand. So it had quite a negative effect, because he thought that was how you reacted when you got angry, was to smack somebody on the hand. And then another example was, and I'd smack his hand, but it wouldn't do anything, and my hand would be tingling, and he wouldn't be crying. So he has got a high pain threshold. I thought, this isn't right. So, it's there. Right. Okay, I'll move on. Okay, we were keen to gain an insight onto how families manage discipline and the contextual circumstances that challenge parents, which is what Anne was saying earlier. And we asked, do you use the same discipline technique in different circumstances? And 53% of parents said they discipline differently in different circumstances. And this must be the diary data. Okay. No, I've lost this, sorry. This is the diary data, okay. Okay, so backpedal there. Most frequently used from the diary data was verbal instruction, so they were telling the child not to to do or not to do something. And with the diary, we actually had a checklist, and parents would check off what techniques they'd used that day. Okay. The second most frequently used techniques was verbal warning or praise, and in that, only 28% used timeout, despite when we did the interview, they said that they used timeout. And the third most frequent approach was distraction, and then reward and explanation. So this was from the diary data. Yeah, now I'm moving on to the context. Okay, so parents often found public disciplinary interactions particularly difficult to deal with, and this was they would often just because of the audience, whether that was real or perceived. So here's some example from the supermarket. The supermarket's a nightmare. I have used the naughty spot at the supermarket. It's time consuming and it doesn't work straight away. It's embarrassing. I can't stand it. It's just too hard. Again, parents changed their way that they were disciplined depending on where they were Supermarket was mentioned a lot. Okay, the way in which people bring up their children is often affected by things going on in their lives, such as illness or workload. So we asked them about this, and the most commonly mentioned issue was tiredness, with 47% saying that they were tired, and that impacted on their parenting. Second was workload. Often these were mentioned in conjunction. And the third was child characteristics. I do have examples, but I think we're probably needing to move on. Physical health problems were also an issue for some of the parents, and 15% mentioned depression. We did, as Anne mentioned, we did a parenting hassle scales, and the report goes into this quite fully. And what we found was that the more parenting hassle, the higher the parenting hassle scales, the frequency and intensity actually affected the number of stresses, or vice versa. We found that those that said they had the most parenting hassles, they also had more stress. Okay. I'm getting a bit lost here. Okay, and the most likely support systems that they mentioned, and I guess I think we probably expected it to be family with 52%, but early childhood teachers were also considered to be a good source of support and advice with 44%, which actually, with our previous research, when we talked to professionals, they actually didn't feel adequately equipped for this. So that's quite interesting that parents feel that they are people that they should be going and they can get advice from. And friends, just over a third. We asked who gave the most useful advice, and early childhood teachers, again, are up there. With family, slightly less, but books also. And friends are less, so that's quite interesting. And these are just a couple of examples here to finish off. So about support from family, so the partner's parents come through maybe once a month on average, they stay and that's really nice, good for them and us, and they can't get enough of the kids. And my mum's usually through once every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks, so we'll take those opportunities. So have a night out. Support from early childhood teachers. So when I talked to the early childhood teacher, she put it all into a good perspective on it. She said you just have to remember to pick your fights, and it's probably not worth fighting over clothes, and she's absolutely right. And again, someone else who said, you know, I've got somewhere to go and they don't mind. They don't mind me asking. And again, partner support. My husband and I talk about it. We have to work out how we're going to do it together. And he just basically takes over. He comes home and we usually do things together on the weekend. And I think it's you now, Anne. Oh, no, sorry, one more. I think this is you. Okay. Examples of where there is no support. There were a small number of parents who felt unsupported. This example in moving house, especially into the community where you don't feel accepted. We had some examples of that. There's nobody here I can talk to, I can ask. I drive, I wouldn't be able to cope on buses. So read through that, I'll let you all read that.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. It's hard if you're not from here. I mean, I think it was only about 10% that felt really unsupported. And that was just one example that struck us as interesting. And one of the things that we haven't put on our slides, but I think is really interesting, that we've actually found that the more sources of support parents have, the more positive the discipline they use is and the less negative. And I think that's a really crucial thing. So, oh, here's another one. A single mum, and I interviewed this one, I remember it clearly. Her mother said, if you have them, you know, you've got to handle them yourself. Yeah, if you decide to have kids, you have to deal with them. And so she was all on her own, and she was really desperate.
He didn't know what to do, so he tried everything. Yeah. All right, so summary. I think that our study fits in with a number of other things that are coming through to show that things are getting more positive with parents. And maybe it's just social change, like we've stopped using corporal punishment for prisoners and we stopped using it in schools, and we're now realising that you don't need to use it in families. And most parents don't use it and don't need to use it. Now, admittedly, there are some limitations. It's a small sample, but there is some very good agreement between ours and some much of the much bigger survey samples, like the study the Office of the Commissioner for Children did and the Ministry of Health. I mean, our study was not intended to be very much focused on statistics. It was more about the context and the things that parents found difficult. But I do think that there are some kind of positive signs. Absolutely, very, very few were enthusiastic about physical punishment. The own experience of parenting is important, but it can be rejected. People can move on and decide to change. Books and TV are an important source of information and support. Family and friends, I thought the stuff about early childhood teachers, because that's one of my particular interests is early childhood education, is they're potentially very important. They're people that know the kids well, they see them every day. And so you feel comfortable talking to them. There's often a relationship of trust. And I've just been told that the Ministry of Education's Parent Support and Early Childhood Program is at risk for having its funding cut, which is terribly sad, because it's a very important thing that early childhood teachers do. They provide parent support and they need the preparations for that. So we need to make sure that all parents have access to support. They need access to good written information and media presentations. And the thing that we're very keen to see is that professionals have more access, because in our previous study, we show they didn't really feel that confident in asking, answering teachers' questions. They're often just drawing on their own common sense experience, which is fine. But, you know, there is research and there are things that could be used to help those professionals. And more recognition, not for early childhood teachers and other professionals. I mean, Plunkett nurses were important too, but I think it was about a third that mentioned Plunkett nurses. But they tend to be for the youngest group of children, whereas early childhood would go up to five. So that's it. Thank you. We've got time for a few...